This is Lake Effect from 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee Public Radio. Thanks for joining us. I'm Mitch Tyson.
And I'm Bonnie North. Over the weekend, President Trump seemed to contradict the leading diplomat in his cabinet. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson had spoken publicly about the diplomatic efforts he was trying to carry out involving China and North Korea, which continues to test fire missiles and threaten countries such as South Korea and the United States.
Trump tweeted essentially that diplomacy is a waste of time and repeated the threat he made at the United Nations to destroy the country of more than 25 million people. North Korea is where we begin our latest conversation with foreign policy news analyst Art Sear. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Mitch. It's always good to be with you and colleagues here.
So we're having this conversation, and we don't know what's gone out over Twitter in the last few minutes, which is a strange place to be conducting foreign policy. I'm not a foreign policy analyst, but I think that's a strange place to conduct foreign policy. Let's talk about North Korea here, and apparently the multiple messages leaving the Trump administration. We have Rex Tillerson and we have Donald Trump, who are seemingly saying two different things about how to engage North Korea and the North Korean leader.
I think Secretary Tillerson, not just related to North Korea, but this past summer we had Vice President Pence and Secretary Tillerson and others reinforcing the traditional view of commitment to the NATO alliance, including specifically mentioning Article 5, that an attack on one is an attack on all. That article was not implemented, actually, until after 9/11, when we had Allied aircraft, including French aircraft, patrolling North America, the U.S. and Canada, so our long-range aircraft were freed up for strikes in Afghanistan. You make an important point, and I think the people to really watch are not the president, but those in the cabinet and in the White House immediately below the chief executive. Very good point, Mitch.
Well, right. So we heard over the weekend, I guess it was, or maybe it was late last week, Rex Tillerson, the Secretary of State, talking about how through Beijing there are lines of communication that are open and diplomatic efforts to maybe tone down the situation with North Korea. Over the weekend, the president tweeted that any kind of diplomatic negotiations are a waste of time. What do you make of that message? And would you say that regardless of what the president says, the diplomatic efforts are still underway?
As you said at the beginning, I believe and certainly hope diplomatic efforts are underway. They usually work best when they're behind the scenes. As you said at the beginning, or at least implied, tweeting is not the best way to conduct international diplomacy or leadership from the chief executive of any country.
I mean, it has to be kind of frustrating for the Secretary of State to be doing and saying one thing and then hearing your boss saying another.
Yeah. Well, like a lot of big business leaders, the women and men who run our big corporations, he's used to frustration and he's used to tense, difficult circumstances, especially in big oil, I would imagine. I think it's actually reassuring. I don't want to sound like a mouthpiece for the Republican Party or conservatives, but I think it's reassuring that big business leaders who for a long time, from the Great Depression, at least well into the 1960s, were seen as suspect by a lot of good Americans in high position, that there's been no controversy to speak of, especially because he's from a big oil company and they're traditionally controversial, that Tillerson has been able to conduct his job as he sees fit without a lot of personal criticism given his corporate and capitalist background. That's a plus, I think, for our country overall. We'll see how he does as Secretary of State.
Well, okay, so let's do a little role-playing here, if we can, and pretend you are the Secretary of State or in some other leadership position. What do you do? How do we deal?
Who are you going to be?
I'm the journalist who is asking you questions.
Right.
But how do we begin to de-escalate this situation? What do we know about what North Korea's aims are? And I'm not talking about where they're aiming their missiles, but, you know, what are they hoping to accomplish by the sort of continual saber-rattling that they're doing?
Well, it's not a rational regime, at least not at the top, speaking of the importance of whoever happens to be at the top. They are terrified of the United States. I think it's in no way excusing the brutal nature of the regime or excusing their current rhetorical behavior or their nuclear weapons program. They are very much afraid, I believe, of the United States, and their experience in the Korean War underscores that, especially the way we ended the war in 53. Unfortunately, President Trump plays to the worst stereotypes and the most hostile and scary stereotypes that they have of the United States and our leaders, and I'm sure that his statements, including his UN address, are broadcast 24/7 nonstop by the state media in Pyongyang. That's most unfortunate. China is the crucial player, and for the first time, they've been going along with UN Security Council resolutions, several of which have been unanimously passed to put pressure on North Korea. They're in a good position to do that. North Korea is an economic dependent of theirs. They have far more trade and investment that's productive with South Korea. The president of China has gone to South Korea. I don't believe he's yet visited North Korea. And this is a promising situation in terms of the economic leverage that has to make a difference.
There was a report just in the last couple of days about an investigation that turned up that that North Korea had been selling weapons to Egypt. Egyptian business leaders were covertly buying these weapons to supply the Egyptian military. What are the ramifications of that knowledge?
It's surface evidence of the tremendous black and very aggressive black market trading that goes on by Pyongyang, not just weapons. But nuclear weapon efforts overseas, bootleg liquor, counterfeit money, prostitution, drugs, weapons of all kinds, you name it, the North Koreans are in that business. In 2010, the Israeli Air Force took out a nuclear facility that was working on weapons in Syria. North Korean scientists were intimately involved with the effort. The press conference held afterwards to give the details to justify the strike was held at the U.S. State Department. Like other activities of a military nature in that region, I'm confident U.S. and military intelligence and military people worked hand in glove in putting this together. That's more dramatic evidence of what the lengths North Korea is willing to go to in order to survive. They're desperate for money. They're also very much afraid of the United States, and it's important for us to keep that in mind. And they're afraid, and the Chinese are concerned that we might, in fact, militarily attack the North. That would mean war with China, and I'm sure we're not going to do that. But that's their worldview, a very paranoid perspective.
So let's switch to electoral politics and Europe for just a moment. There was just a referendum held in the Catalonia region of Spain, which is seeking independence. They voted overwhelmingly for independence. Let's talk about what that means, what the implications are for both that movement and potential other movements in other regions of other countries that might be seeking to do the same thing.
Well, Catalonian separatist leaders and people who sympathize have been very, very daring in putting together this referendum that was just held, as you indicate. The central government was strongly and publicly against it. They sent in police to disrupt the process, which I think is a big mistake. There was some violence. It's only going to reinforce the separatist movement and sympathy for that movement in Spain. There's regional separatism elsewhere, not only in Spain, but in Europe, as you indicate. In Great Britain, the Scottish National Party, the SNP, has been around throughout the 20th century and into the 21st, but they've recently gotten much stronger in Scotland. They didn't do so well in the last general election, but the earlier one they did extremely well. This reflects a wider region-wide throughout Europe phenomenon. Religion has faded, an important basis for party politics in Europe, as in the United States historically. Ideology has faded with post-war prosperity and the end of the Cold War. It's not just Marxism, socialism, and communism, but fascism, Nazi parties. They've generally faded in terms of broad public appeal, which opens the door for this kind of regional sentiment. To me, it's kind of understandable and natural, especially in nation states that do not have a strong tradition of long-term centralization. And outside of France and at least parts of Scandinavia, most countries in Europe don't have a history of really long-term powerful centralization. So I think we can expect more regional bubbling up of regional sentiment.
What would be in it for the Catalonia region to go it alone?
I think it's a highly emotional sentiment. I know more about the British Isles, and in fact, if Scotland were independent of the rest of Britain and were independent of London, they'd have heavy defense, security, and police expenditures that are currently subsidized by the central government. It would also complicate economic life for a country that's got an important, fascinating history, but it's still only about 5 million people. I think it's not a particularly rational, like a lot of political decisions, it's not a particularly rational sentiment. I would hope they will work things out. I'm confident the British will, because they always do. But I would hope that it won't turn into a violent armed conflict in Spain.
All right, so that's Spain. Let's talk about recent elections at the representative level in Germany.
Yeah, in some ways, contrary to what I just said, a very strong nationalist party that contains people who, at least some people who think that the Third Reich had the right idea and the approach to things, has gotten representation in the Bundestag, the lower house, the more important house in the German parliament. Unless you get 5% of the vote, you're eliminated and don't get any seats in their system. One of a number of constitutional provisions to try to restrict the strength of extremist, especially far-right parties. The CDU-CSU, Christian Democratic, Christian Social Union, roughly conservative party that has dominated German politics since the Federal Republic was established after World War II. They got the most seats, but they and the Social Democrats, the SPD, both lost support, reflecting Europe-wide trends. The CDU-CSU and SPD had a broad grand coalition under Chancellor Angela Merkel. She will continue in office, but she is forced to try to work out an alliance with the Free Democratic Party, the kind of liberal free market party that is back in the parliament after getting devastated last time around, the Green Party, which in some ways is sympathetic, I think, to her point of view. She'll work things out. She's a remarkably durable politician. Anytime the far right does well in Germany at any level, we immediately have the specter of Adolf Hitler raised by the media. That's a false way, I think, to look at contemporary Germany.
Interesting times we live in.
They certainly are. And Germany plays a leading role in economic strength and stability in the European Union, and I believe in humanitarian welcoming of refugees and other relief efforts. And I think Chancellor Merkel deserves a lot of credit, not only as a skillful politician, but a very wise and sensible leader.
Art Zier, thank you so much.
Thank you, Mitch. We've solved all the problems once again.
We'll see you again soon.
I hope so.
Art Zier is a professor of political economy and world business, and he directs the Clausen Center for World Business at Carthage College in Kenosha. He is also a regular Lake Effect contributor.